The Rothschilds bought controlling interest in England's British East India Shipping Company and the illegal opium trade with China. They offer junior partnerships to New England's leading American families. The Russell, Coolidge, Delano, Forbes, and Perkins families became fabulously rich, smuggling opium aboard their speedy clipper ships into China. In 1820, Samuel Russell bought out the Perkins Syndicate and ran the opium smuggling operation with his partner, Warren Delano Jr., who was the grandfather of President Franklin D. Roosevelt. The United States flag was designed after the British East India Company flag with 13 red and white stripes. Both flags copy the red and white striped sails of the Viking ships, which were the color standard for the tribe of Dan.
Finally, Britain found a commodity that China would take. Opium. Imported from India. Just a few chests at first, and then thousands. When the Chinese authorities tried to stop the opium trade, the British sent in their gunboats. After nearly 20 years of turmoil, the Treaty of Tianjin in 1858 not only allowed opium to be imported, but handed over China's ports and all her international trade to Western control. After the war, opium poured into China on an even greater scale, and her emperors were powerless to stop it.
In 1842, the British stole Hong Kong from China in an opium drug deal called the Treaty of Nanking. The Russell family, who controlled the U.S. arm of the Rothschild drug smuggling operations, set up the Skull and Bones fraternity at Yale University. America's big money families formed the fraternity's inner power circle. Taft, Russell, Schiff, Harriman, Bush, Warburg, Guggenheim, Rockefeller, Stimson, Weyhauser, Vanderbilt, Goodyear, and Pillsbury were all members. These families intermarried over the generations to form America's big money aristocracy.
Those guys were both members of the secret society at Yale, right?
I have on my website, Infowars.com.
So we're not getting this new guy is no better than the lone
guy. Here's the deal. If you believe Reuters, they're third cousins. If you believe the Associated Press, they're ninth cousins. They're both ninth cousins to Hugh Hefner. They're members of the same secret society, only 15 members each year, which admittedly was set up in 1832 to overthrow the U.S.
And we only have 800 living members of that organization, but you can count their members as three presidents, eight CIA directors, many of the heads of the Fortune 500. And they work in concert together to bring you the unfolding police state, to bring you these criminal wars of aggression against sovereign, innocent nations.
Bush, Kerry, and Hefner, odd cousins.
Oh, you found it.
News.
Wonders, think of that. Out of 290 million Americans, we have two people from the most elite secret society in the United States, only 15 members tapped or chosen each year, and this is who we get for our presidential candidates. Out of 290 million, two people from the same organization that just chooses a couple people every year. It's absolutely incredible. Can you guys open a website audio up on the air?
Yeah.
You can go to Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com right now, scroll down, and it says Skull and Bones, and you can play the clip of Bush on Meet the Press a few weeks ago saying, yeah, it's so secret I can't talk about it.
Okay, let me play this.
Yeah.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America? The conspiracy theorists are going to go wild.
I'm sure they are. I don't know. I haven't seen the web.
Number 322?
First of all, he's not the nominee. Look, I look for...
Are you prepared to lose?
No, I'm not going to lose.
Kind of skipped over it, didn't he?
Well, he just said it's so secret I can't talk about it. Now go down. Under that,
he was serious. I thought he was kidding.
Under that is Lord Kerry on Meet the Press about a month earlier.
Yeah,
You both were members of Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale. What does that tell us?
Not much, because it's a secret.
Is there a secret handshake? Is there a secret code?
I wish there were something secret I could manifest.
322, a secret number?
There are all kinds of secrets, Tim, but one thing is not a secret. I disagree with this president's direction that he's taking the country. We can do a better job, and I intend to do it.
And he laughs, too.
Wow. Do you know what's interesting about that clip? They both gave the same
answer,
short answer, and move on to the next subject with a chuckle.
With a little chuckle in between.
No, I'm saying it's all staged.
That's pretty weird.
So we have these cousins who are members of the same secret society who have sworn an oath to each other above all other oaths. And they admit, even in the mainstream media, but laugh and say, oh, it's no big deal, that these so-called leaders engage in bizarre occultic rituals. And it's so weird that the general public has trouble even interfacing with it. There's kind of a cognitive dissonance that we don't want to believe it. We cannot ignore it.
And privilege that are cloaked in secrecy. It's not supposed to be the way we do things. We're supposed to do things out in the open in America. And so that any society or institution that hints that there's something hidden. Right, you could hear strange cries and whispers coming from the Skull and Bones tomb. Is, I think, a legitimate subject for investigation.
His is a 30-year obsession dating back to his days as a Yale classmate of George W. Bush. Rosenbaum, a self-described undergraduate nerd, was certainly not a contender for Bones, but he was fascinated by its weirdness.
It's this sepulchral, tomb-like, windowless, granite, sandstone bulk that you can't miss. And I lived next to it. I had passed it all the time and during the initiation.
Despite a lifetime of attempts to get inside, the best Rosenbaum could do was hide out on the ledge of a nearby building a few years ago to videotape a nocturnal initiation ceremony in the tomb's courtyard.
A woman holds a knife and pretends to slash the throat of another person lying down before him. They're screaming and yelling at the neophytes.
Alexandra Robbins says the cast of the initiation ritual is right out of Harry Potter meets Dracula.
There's a devil, a Don Quixote, and a pope who has one foot sheathed in a white monogram slipper resting on a stone skull. The initiates are led into the room one at a time, and once an initiate is inside, the bones then shriek at him. Finally, the bonesman is shoved to his knees in front of Don Quixote, sort of as the shrieking crowd falls silent. And Don Quixote lifts his sword and taps the bonesman on his left shoulder and says, "By order of our order, I dub thee Knight of Eulogia."
Since wars were good for the rent-a-troop business, Prince William used his royal connections in Denmark and England to provoke these wars. King George III of England rented Hessian soldiers from Mayor Rothschild and Prince William to fight the American colonists. American colonists had already shot down millions of North American Indians whose spears and arrows were helpless against the deadly gunfire. The worst Holocaust in human history occurred not in Nazi Germany, but on American soil. By 1776, British and Hessian troops arrived on American shores ready to fight the American colonists.
Preparing for an attack.
And we won't have long to wait either. See there? Hessian troops to the north. Hessian? Russian mercenaries. I can't believe the king is paying Germans to come here and kill British colonists.
Won their independence, and Mayor Rothschild won his blood money for the heads of each and every Hessian soldier killed on the battlefield. Back in Europe, Napoleon, with his mighty French army, became master of Europe. When Napoleon and his troops stormed into Frankfurt, Germany, William feared for his life and his vast fortune. He left $3 million in the hands of Mayor Rothschild to pay the Hessian soldiers. Then he escaped to Denmark to stay with his royal relatives, all of whom were descendants of the tribe of Dan. Mayor Rothschild received a stock market tip from his World Revolutionary Network. Instead of paying the Hessian soldiers with the $3 million that was left to him by William, he bet the money on his insider stock market tip. With his new fortune, Mayor Rothschild set up 5 family banks to be run by each of his 5 sons in London, Paris, Naples, Frankfurt, and Vienna. On September 19, 1812, Mayor Rothschild died at the age of 68. He left instructions that the amount of the inheritance must never be made public, that secrecy and ruthlessness must be used in all business practices, and that family members must intermarry with their own blood relatives to keep the family fortune all in the family. All 5 brothers dedicated themselves to their ancestors' world revolutionary dream. That dream was to control the entire world under one world ruler, by disarming the nations of the world.
A king, the son of David, will purify Jerusalem from the nations that trample her down, destroy the lawless nations and gather a holy people whom he will lead in righteousness.
Mayor Rothschild's most successful sons were Nathan, who ran the London Bank, and James, who ran the Paris Bank. Together, they changed the face of history and became known throughout Europe as the Demon Brothers. Their father had given them a detailed New World Order plan for world control. Adam Weishaupt wrote and completed the plan on May 1, 1776, with Rothschild financing. It was a futuristic plan that would put New World Order members over the next centuries into political power positions.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
It was a plan to divide and conquer the nations of the world by provoking wars, then profiting from war loans and from the sale of weapons to both sides. Exhausted by war, terror, and chaos, humanity would eventually bow down to one world ruler and one world army as a solution. It was a plan to control public opinion by purchasing the controlling shares in TV networks, newspapers, publishing houses, and film studios.
Brief news and updates from Washington and around the world every 15 minutes throughout the business day. As influential leaders, global markets, and your money take center stage. On CNBC.
Sports, games, and banks would be monopolized, and people and nations would be made into obedient debt slaves. With Rothschild financing, Adam Weishaupt formed a secret world revolutionary group called the Illuminati. He recruited thousands of influential members by convincing them that only men of superior ability had the right to rule over the ignorant masses. French police exposed the plan when they found documents on an Illuminati courier who was struck by lightning while traveling from Germany to France. The Illuminati was forced underground. They took refuge in the lodges of a secret brotherhood called the Freemasons, who practiced death and rebirth rituals and whose history dates back to the construction of Solomon's Temple. Nathan and James Rothschild came up with a scheme that would put the Illuminati plan for world control into action. It would also make them filthy rich. The brothers helped finance both sides of Napoleon's famous Battle of Waterloo between the French and the English. With advanced knowledge of the British victory, Nathan Rothschild spread lies that the British had been defeated, which caused a stock market crash. While panicked English investors sold their life savings, Nathan bought up their market shares for pennies on the dollar. When official news of the British victory over Napoleon was announced, the English stock market skyrocketed, and so did Nathan's wealth. In one foul swoop, the Demon Brothers had double-crossed the English masses and taken control of the Bank of England. Flaunting their stupendous wealth, the brothers went on a lavish spending spree. They bought mansions, fashionable clothes, and hosted extravagant parties. By 1818, they had picked the pockets of French investors by crashing the French government bond market, International Bank, and named it N.M. Rothschild and Sons. The Pope became their most famous customer. The Catholic Church, which had financed the wholesale slaughter, torture, and looting of hundreds of thousands of Muslims during the Christian Crusades, were now doing business with the Demon Brothers. By 1823, the Rothschilds were guardians of the entire papal treasure and took over the financial operations of the Catholic Church. Enraged citizens accused the Rothschilds of conspiring to control the world's money markets. Fearing for their lives, the Rothschilds retreated into the shadows and cast their eyes on the youthful United States of America. To avoid publicity, the Rothschilds made themselves invisible by creating and hiding behind two front companies, J.P. Morgan and Kuhn and Loeb.
More and more power was becoming concentrated in fewer and fewer hands. By 1906, J.P. Morgan's bank controlled one-third of America's railways and almost 70% of the steel industry. He eventually had a stake in the major companies of the 20th century, among them AT&T, ITT, General Electric, General Motors, and DuPont.
At one point, Morgan made the offhanded comment, "America is good enough for me." And the newspaper, William Jennings Bryan, recorded, "Whenever you're tired of it, you can give it back." I mean, that was the image of J.P. Morgan, the owner of the United States.
The success of Morgan's industrials was quickly reflected in the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
The Rothschilds bought controlling interest in England's British East India Shipping Company and the illegal opium trade with China. They offered junior partnerships to New England's leading American families. International Bank and named it N.M. Rothschild and Sons. The Pope became their most famous customer. The Catholic Church, which had financed the wholesale slaughter, torture, and looting of hundreds of thousands of Muslims during the Christian Crusades, were now doing business with the Demon Brothers. By 1823, the Rothschilds were guardians of the entire papal treasure and took over the financial operations of the Catholic Church. Enraged citizens accused the Rothschilds of conspiring to control the world's money markets. Fearing for their lives, the Rothschilds retreated into the shadows and cast their eyes on the youthful United States of America. To avoid publicity, the Rothschilds made themselves invisible by creating and hiding behind two front companies, J.P. Morgan and Kuhn and Loeb.
More and more power was becoming concentrated in fewer and fewer hands. By 1906, J.P. Morgan's bank controlled one-third of America's railways and almost 70% of the steel industry. He eventually had a stake in the major companies of the 20th century, among them AT&T, ITT, General Electric, General Motors, and DuPont.
At one point, Morgan made the offhanded comment, "America is good enough for me." And the newspaper William Jennings Bryan retorted, "Whenever you're tired of it, you can give it back." I mean, that was the image of J.P. Morgan, the owner of the United States.
The success of Morgan's industrials was quickly reflected in the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
The Rothschilds bought controlling interest in England's British East India Shipping Company and the illegal opium trade with China. They offered junior partnerships to New England's leading American... Germany won the First World War by 1916 without a single shot being fired on German soil. British convoys were blown out of the Atlantic by German subs, the French army mutinied, and the Russian army was defecting. With British Prime Minister Lloyd George up against a wall, Lionel Rothschild and the Jewish Zionists offered the British a deal they couldn't refuse. "We'll bring the United States into the war as your ally and win the war for you," they said, "if you'll promise us Palestine." In April of 1917, President Wilson got the green light and declared war on Germany. Because of overwhelming opposition to the war, Wilson invoked the draft and passed the Espionage Act, forcing Americans to fight or be thrown in jail. Billions of U.S. taxpayers' money was delivered to the British war machine, money that was never repaid. In return, the British government wrote the famous Balfour Declaration and addressed it to none other than Lord Lionel Rothschild. The declaration promised Palestine and Israel to the Rothschild Zionists.
1917, Lord Allenby conquered the Holy Land, and the Jews were promised a national home in Palestine by the Earl of Balfour, a policy endorsed by Woodrow Wilson and by the League of Nations, which made Palestine a British mandate.
With the fall of Nazi Germany, the Rothschilds wasted no time waving their Balfour Declaration at the British government and reminding them of their written promise to give them Palestine. But how could the British promise the Arab land of Palestine to the Jews? In 1917, the British parachuted free opium and hashish to the Turkish troops and stole Palestine from them.
One ingenious strategy was to parachute hashish and opium to the Turkish troops to try to keep their minds off the fighting. Allenby's strategy worked brilliantly.
During World War II, the British needed Arab oil and signed an agreement with the Arabs which forbid Jewish immigration into Palestine. Then at the end of the war, the British broke their agreement with the Arabs and allowed the Rothschild Jewish Zionists to smuggle hundreds of thousands of Jews from around the world into Palestine. To win public support, the Rothschilds, who owned Reuters and the Associated Press, bombarded their media empire with images of homeless Jewish Holocaust refugees crowded together in ships off the coast of Palestine. On October 24, 1945, the Bankster pirates gave birth to their most powerful weapon of global control, the United Nations. According to plan, the British pulled out of Palestine and gave the land to the Jewish Zionists. These Zionist extremists call themselves God's chosen race of people and believe they have a God-given right to the land of the Palestinians. It is important to know that the land now called Israel was originally called Canaan in ancient times. Canaan was populated by the Canaanite people, who were the ancestors of today's Palestinians imprisoned in refugee camps in Israel. About 3,500 years ago, the Semitic Hyksos kings ruled Egypt for 100 years, but were expelled from Egypt into Canaan. The Egyptians called these Hyksos people the Habarus, which means Hebrews. These expelled Hebrews invaded and conquered the land of Canaan and changed the name of the land from Canaan to Israel. In 135 AD, the name was once again changed to Palestine after the Romans conquered the land. In 1948, the Bankster-controlled United Nations officially turned Palestine into the Zionist State of Israel. To deal with the millions of Palestinian residents, the Israeli Jews massacred and drove them from their villages and homeland. The Jews herded the Palestinians into two separated regions called the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The Rothschilds soon began financing Jewish Holocaust refugees to build illegal Jewish settlements on Palestinian land. These illegal Jewish settlements set the stage for Israel's Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's reign of terror against Palestinians who dared to defend what was left of their stolen homeland. Like Saddam Hussein, Sharon violated dozens of UN resolutions by using hundreds of tanks and American-supplied gunships and planes in an unrelenting campaign of bombing, murdering, bulldozing, starving, and terrorizing the Palestinians off of what remained of their land. In violation of international law, Israel also secretly developed over 100 nuclear weapons of mass destruction capable of vaporizing the entire Middle East. Defenseless against Israel's U.S.-backed military and media campaign, the Palestinian Muslims fought back with sticks and stones and suicide as their only means of defense against the wholesale theft of their ancient homeland. The story of the Bible was written by Hebrew Jews, who tell us that the Hebrew Jews are God's chosen race of people. Bible prophecy predicts that they will one day rule the world from their temple throne in Jerusalem, and that the world's King of Kings will be a descendant of King David and King Solomon of Israel. That is what Bible believers all over the world believe will come to pass. To turn this Bible prophecy into a reality would demand the cooperation of world leaders. It would also mean building a third temple in Jerusalem over the ancient ruins of King Solomon's temple. But there is one giant-sized problem. A sacred Muslim shrine called Dome of the Rock was already built on top of the ruins of Solomon's temple in the 7th century. It still stands majestically today in the heart of Jerusalem, and it would have to be destroyed. Since Israel is surrounded by not-so-friendly Muslim nations, and with millions of Muslim Palestinians living in Israel's West Bank and Gaza Strip, this Bible prophecy is impossible to fulfill, or is it? Like a screenplay for a movie, the Bible story was written by Hebrew Jews, but who is the director and the producer? Is it God, or is it a special interest group of the world's wealthiest men? The Rothschilds, whose front companies had helped finance Hitler and the Jewish slave labor camps, had turned Jewish Holocaust victims into victimizers. Imprisoned inside barbed wire refugee camps, the Palestinians began to resemble the victims of Nazi concentration camps. According to author Simon Schama, the Rothschilds own 80% of the land of Israel. Even the flag of Israel flies the hexagram symbol from the Rothschild family's red shield. The hexagram has 6 points, 6 triangles, and six sides on the central hexagram. The numbers 666 are associated with the biblical prophecies that predict an apocalyptic Third World War. The Rothschilds bought Reuters in the 1800s. Reuters then bought the Associated Press, which selects and delivers the same news stories to the entire world, day after day. They have controlling interest in three major television networks and easily avoid media attention since they own it. Until recently, they owned and operated England's Royal Mint and continue to be the gold agent for the Bank of England, which they also direct. They control the LBMA, London Bullion Market Association, where 30 to 42 million ounces of gold worth over $11 billion are traded daily. The Rothschilds earn millions weekly just on transaction fees alone. They also fix the world price of gold on a daily basis and profit from its ups and downs. Over the centuries, the Rothschilds have amassed trillions of dollars worth of gold bullion in their subterranean vaults and have cornered the world's gold supply. They own controlling interest in the world's largest oil company, Royal Dutch Shell. They operate phony charities and offshore banking services where the wealth of the black nobility and the Vatican is hidden in secret accounts at Rothschild Swiss banks, trusts, and holding companies. Although Evelyn Rothschild looks like a harmless gray-haired old man, make no mistake about it, Rothschild and his ancestors have handpicked presidents, crashed stock markets, bankrupted nations, orchestrated wars, and sponsored the mass murder and impoverishment of millions. The wealth hoarded by this one family alone could feed, clothe, and shelter every human being on Earth.